Russian Book World.
Welcome to Russian Book World from the Voice of Russia, a weekly look at books from and about Russia and the context in which they're written, produced, translated and marketed. My name is Ian Mitchell, and today we'll be talking about the great Silver Age poet Nikolai Gumilev, who was married to Anna Akhmatova and who was murdered by the Bolsheviks in 1921 at the age of 35, when he was at the height of his powers, a tremendous loss to world literature. I say world literature despite the fact that though Gumilev is one of the most highly regarded poets among Russians, his work is comparatively little known in English translation. This is a question we will be discussing later. But first, to get some more general background, I was joined in the studio recently by Olga Medvedka, a Moscow expert on the Silver Age generally, who taught for some years at the State University of New York. But Olga has a more intimate connection with Gumilev, in that her late husband, Sergei Luknitsky, spent 20 years trying to rehabilitate the poet's reputation after his own father, Pavel Luknitsky, had written the first biography called The Labours and Days of Gumilev, a book which unfortunately is available only in Russian. Pavel Luknitsky was Anna Akhmatova's secretary for 5 years in the later 1920s, and she gave him her whole archive to conceal from the Bolsheviks, which he did by hiding it under a false floor which he had constructed in his flat as times darkened and the mood shifted towards monocultural Stalinist philistinism. Gumilev stayed banned throughout the Soviet period for reasons Olga will explain. It was only after 1991 that this literary treasure trove was retrieved. In 1997, the whole archive was given to the Pushkinsky Dorm in St. Petersburg, and today it's being used to prepare a definitive 10-volume edition of Gumilev's writing. I talked to Olga shortly before the airing of a program about Gumilev on the Kultura channel on Russian television in which she appeared. I started by asking to give an overall assessment of the poet.
Gumilev is considered to be one of the greatest poets of the Silver Age. Gumilev's fate probably is the most tragic fate of all Russian poets. He was the first victim of Bolshevik repression and was one of the first who was executed among the most prominent writers of the 1920s. And he was the last to be rehabilitated, and that happened only in 1991. And his books were absolutely banned in the USSR for almost 70 years. And people who were collecting his books or had his portraits were persecuted. For example, one of his disciples, Ida Nappelbaum, who was a poet herself, she got 10 years of camps when they discovered that she kept his portrait.
He's a product of the so-called Silver Age. If you could maybe very briefly describe what the Silver Age was and how Nikolai Gumilev fitted into that.
The period known as Russia's Silver Age is one of the shortest but most influential in the country's artistic heritage. The beginning of the Silver Age is usually referred to the 1890s and up to the 1920s. That is the turn of the 20th century. And Russia saw at that time an extraordinary flourishing of the musical, dramatic, literary, fine and decorative arts. So it started a great flight of Russian culture, at the same time becoming a beginning of its tragic fall down. And there were very different trends at that time in the literary sphere, and that is symbolism and the such poets as Brusov, Andrei Bely, and Alexander Blok were these poets of that time. And then there came another trend, and that was called Acmeism, and Gumilev was considered to be the founder of this trend.
Why is it the Silver Age? Where does silver come into this?
Well, because the 19th century is considered to be the golden age of Russian culture and Russian literature. And these were the names of Pushkin and Lermontov and Gogol and Turgenev. So this was the golden age. Well, about 25 years at the turn of the century and was called the Silver Age.
Gumilev was a traveler and explorer too. Could you just give us a little bit of his non-poetic background? What did he do in life?
His father was a navy doctor and he traveled traveled a lot. And I think, well, from the very early age, from childhood, Gumilov listened to these stories that his father told him about different countries. And so he was absolutely fascinated by this. So he wanted to travel himself. And even in his childhood, he started to write poetry quite early, when he was 6 or 7. In the beginning of the summer of 1907, Gumilov made his first trip to Africa. And then his book, Romantic Flowers, came out. And this book, he wrote about these exotic places, far away tribes, and the nature of Africa that fascinated him.
Could you just describe what acmeism actually was? What type of poetry came out of that movement?
The movement began in the early 20th century, and in defiance of the older poets whose innovations had changed poetry in Russia, so Gumilov, Akhmatova and Mandelstam began to apply their own ideas to the art of building poetry. They wanted to bring the art form back down to earth. They didn't believe poetry was tied to mysticism and thought that poets should express ideas about culture, the world, and human existence.
And he married Anna Akhmatova. When was that?
Well, the first time he met her, they were quite young. This was in 1903. Akhmatova was only 14 then. And they both went to school, and this was in Tsarskoye village. It's not far from Petersburg. And Gumilov fell in love with her at first sight, while Akhmatova was just interested in him, but she wasn't in love with him. And then in 1905, he proposed to her for the first time, but she rejected him, and brokenhearted, he went traveling. And later on, so that was in 1910, when he again returned from one of his travelings and proposed to her, so she at last accepted him, and she wrote to one of her friends, "I don't love him, but I consider him one of the best poets of our time, and I will do my best to make him happy. I know that he is my fate."
How did her poetry affect his poetry affect hers? Was there any kind of interaction in poetic terms between the two of them?
At first, he was already a master, and she was only, writing poetry for herself. And later on, and when they got married, it was Gumilov who introduced her to all the poets that were in Petersburg, and she became very popular. And of course, there was sort of rivalry between them. And that in many ways, I think influenced their personal life and family life, because here in one family, there were these two very strong and independent personalities and poets. And both of them had their own audience and their own fans. And so that's why there was a rivalry between them. And once when they had a quarrel about something, Akhmatova said, "My poems are better than yours." And then she realized what she had said, and she said, it's a joke. But Gumilov never forgot this and never forgave these words.
He was, in a sense, her mentor.
Yes, in the beginning, yes.
Russian Book World. So then the First World War came along.
In August 1914, the First World War began, and Gumilov volunteered for the service, and he served in the regiment, and he was very brave, and that's why he was honored with 2 Georgievsky crosses. He related some of his experience of war tales in a Cavalryman Notes, which was printed in the daily newspaper in 1915 and 1916. He was wounded several times, and then he recovered. But that also gave him experience of war and courage, and he wrote about it in his poetry too.
Then the revolution happened. What were the circumstances there?
In the beginning of 1918, he was in London, but he wanted to come back to Russia. And lots of his friends, both in France and in Great Britain, told him that this was crazy, that actually this was suicidal. But for him, he couldn't imagine his life without his country, without the people whom he left. Well, he left his family there and his friends. And besides, he was the man of honor, and that was one of his probably creeds, that he had to be useful to his country.
And what happened when he did get back?
He started to work for the publishing house World Literature, and actually it was Maxim Gorky who started this publishing house, and in that way he gave work to many literary men and writers, Bloch, Lazinski, Zamyatin, and other people were working there. So Gumilev served as the head of the French literature department. He was a teacher, and actually lots of Russian poets were fascinated by him. He was teaching them how to write poetry, and some people criticized him for that. But in a way, that shows again his, in a way, ideal approach for him. He was not a political person. And when Gumilev returned from Britain in 1918, he met, of course, his wife. She asked for divorce. So in 1918, after his return, they divorced. But by this time already, they had been living separate lives for several years, because Gumilev, of course, had his own infatuations. And in his life, there were always lots of women, and that was part of his image, because he was always trying to conquer different countries. And to be inspired, of course, there were different women whom he had to conquer, both.
I thought you said he was a man of honor.
Well, he was a man of honor, and he always respected women, and for him they were always idols, but he was a poet, so he had to take his inspiration from somewhere.
Okay, well, let's just now come on to the circumstances of Gumilev's arrest and eventual execution. How did that come about?
In 1921, he was arrested by the Bolsheviks, and that was in August, for his alleged part in anti-Soviet plot. So this was called Tagantsevsky plot. Before that, in spring, in 1921, there was a Kronstadt revolt, and it was attributed that intelligentsia also played part in this, though actually these were sailors who rebelled against Bolshevik order at that time. Professor Tagantsev was arrested, and when he was interrogated, they asked him who were in this organization. They told him that nothing will happen to these people. And so he named different people, and among them was Gumilev.
It would be genuinely true to say he was anti-Bolshevik in sentiment.
He was apolitical. He did not approve of what was going on, that's for sure. At that time, it's just to oppose what he saw. He proclaimed that he was a monarchist. On the 4th of August, he was arrested, and on the 24th of August, he was already killed. The names of the people who were killed were published in the newspaper, and that was a shock for everybody.
Am I right in saying this was the first occasion in which the Bolsheviks really attacked what you might call cultural figures, in other words, non-directly political figures?
Yes, and that really was in that way. And actually, Maxim Gorky wrote a letter to Lenin asking to free Gumilev and others, and saying that they were the people of the literary world, and besides, Gumilev was an outstanding poet. And so they say that actually there is a letter that Lenin gave direction, to free him, but this note came too late. But actually, I don't think that this is true.
So why was his poetry so strongly anathemized through Soviet periods?
Well, it wasn't about his poetry, it was about himself. But actually, he was executed and he was killed as the man who was counter-revolutionary. And that was his crime. Even after Stalin's death, lots of people were rehabilitated, but not Gumilev. And actually, my husband, Sergei Luknitsky, was the person who devoted 20 years of his life to rehabilitate Gumilev. And he said there was like deadlock all the time. And even in the 1980s, when he tried, he sent an appeal and wrote several letters to the higher court and so on, and still nothing happened. And he couldn't at first understand why. And then when he was talking to one of the members of Communist Party, Alexander Yakovlev, he said, the time is not right. You see, we are rehabilitating people who were executed or repressed under Stalin, and Gumilev was repressed under Lenin. So when he was rehabilitated in 1991, there was this fantastic phenomenon when his books were published in millions, and immediately they were sold out.
So he's very popular in Russia today.
He's very popular with the young people because what he wrote about is really part of the life of the young people. Actually, yesterday in Bulgakov's house, where in the hall there was a meeting of the people, and that started the first international Gumilev festival. So people got together, those who love Gumilev. Well, most of them were young people, and they were speaking about Gumilev. They were reciting their own poems devoted to Gumilev or inspired by Gumilev. Isn't it something that the poet really wish for his future fate? At the same time, the problem is there is no Gumilev museum. Well, if we speak about other poets like Akhmatova, Mayakovsky, Gissing, and Tsvetaeva, even Mandelstam, they had their museums. Some of them have museums in different cities of Russia, but not Gumilev. Again, as if he is doomed. I hope that in Literary Gazette there will be published a letter of prominent people of Russia, of culture, who appeal to the government that it is high time for us to make this Gumilev Museum.
Right. Well, thank you very much indeed, Olga.
One more thing that I wanted to say, that this international Gumilev Festival, there will be readings in different cities, and that will be in New York, in Samovar. There will be readings in Sydney, in Paris, in Jerusalem. So in all the cities where there are Russian communities, in this way, they will commemorate this 125th anniversary of this great poet.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
You're tuned to the Voice of Russia.
You're listening to Russian Book World. My name is Ian Mitchell, and today we are talking about Nikolai Gumilev, who was born 125 years ago this month. I'm now joined on the phone from Bristol by Dr. Michael Baska, who is Professor of Russian Literature at the City's University. He is known for having published a collection of Gumilev's writing in Paris in 1986, some years before any of it could be read in Russia. Dr. Blaska is also one of the editors of the Pushkinsky Dorm edition of the collected works of Gumilev, which I referred to earlier, and which is based on the archive kept from Bolshevik clutches by Olga Medvedka's late father-in-law. Could you maybe explain why you think we in the West have not heard as much about Gumilev as, say, Mandelstam, Mayakovsky, or Akhmatova, those kind of people?
Well, I think he was an unknown quantity in Russian literary life for a long time as well, until the late 1980s when he was rehabilitated. And that made him into a cult figure in Russia. But cult status alone isn't enough to make him a popular poet in the West. Because he was killed at the very beginning of the Soviet era in 1921, he's regarded in Russian circles as a poet martyr. But that doesn't come through in his writing, of course, in the way that it does in the writing of Mandelstam or Akhmatova or in Mayakovsky, who engaged with the Soviet political realities. Gumilev wrote about other things, quite simply. He speculated on the nature of life, it seems to me. But his poetry is quite difficult. It's not necessarily been well served by translators. And because it seems very often to deal with non-Russian themes, quite abstract themes, themes of other cultures, or to draw on quite remote esoteric sources, it's not as immediately accessible to an audience looking for Russianness in a Russian poet as the work of Akhmatov Mandelstam, who died because they were in direct opposition in their writings to the regime in which they lived.
So in that sense, it's more maybe international, but with a peculiarly Russian accent in terms of language, which makes it difficult to appreciate internationally.
There is something international about it, but I also think that it's to do with the time in which Gumilyov wrote. It seems to me that it's helpful to understand what Gumilyov's about by looking at what preceded Gumilyov. He was preceded by an era of Russian symbolism, and that had to do, of course, with looking at worlds beyond this one and a scepticism about the reality of the world in which we live. Gumilyov led a movement called Acmeism, which included Mandelstam and Akhmatova, and that's associated with looking at the nature of this world. Acmeism was described as a return to this life, and that sounds in one sense quite simplistic, striving almost for some optimistic, realistic descriptions of things around us, joy in a flower because of the flower, that kind of thing. But it's much more than that. What I would say, I think, is that Gumilyov's poetry is anthropocentric. In other words, it's about man. If symbolism is about other realities, what Gumilyov's poetry seems to me to be doing is trying to locate man, a human being, within the reality in which he finds himself.
Is that anything comparable in any way with our metaphysical poets in English?
I think there is a distant parallel between Gumilyov and someone like Donne, if you like, in the exuberance of discovery of this world, the exotic imagery that's used to describe that, also a strong sense of religious colouring, which is part of Gumilyov. But the language is very different. Of course, Donne plays with language in very inventive ways. So in a sense does Gumilyov, but whereas Donne writes within a single system of belief, it seems to me that Gumilyov is interesting, this comes back to internationalism, because he's probing different systems of belief. In his last book of verse, he draws on Persian poetry and Madame Blavatsky and theosophy and a whole series of different philosophical systems, not as beliefs that he himself embraces, but as ways of projecting human life and trying to understand what it's about. So he's much more eclectic than the English metaphysical.
And how would you describe his style, apart from saying it's an internationalized version of Donne and Herrick and Marvell and so on? How would you characterize it for a non-Russian expert audience?
Well, he writes in very regular and traditional meters. His diction is quite carefully chosen, quite ornate, I suppose. He set a great store by craftsmanship, by chiseling his words, by choosing his right words, the right words, and condensing his ideas into traditional forms. Mandelstam talked about classical revolution in art as the most important thing. And Gumilyov adopts and adapts classical meters and rhythms, but fills them with new words and new content and ideas.
Finally, what about the future? Do you think there's anything that Gumilyov has to say that the modern world might want to hear, or is he of purely antiquarian interest? And how would you sum up his poetic achievement?
I think that he has a lot to say still, because what he's about, if I come back to his anthropocentrism, is what man is and how to make sense of living in a difficult world. He has a sense of civilized European man or Western man's diminished links with the primitive and the mythic and the numinous for the heroic past. And he also has a sense of searching for meaning, and I think that's not gone away. One of the things I like in Gumilyov is a fine balance of optimism. In one sense, a belief in a kind of unconditional existence, of an ordering logos, a purpose to the universe. And that's a token of man's eventual release from the spiritual impoverishment he might find himself in at the moment. At the same time, there's a frequent pessimism because this is remote. Release isn't coming soon. There's a threat of cataclysm, of increasing loss of identity and meaning, I suppose, that never drives to complete despair, but always colours the optimism, holds it in tension. And I think that he's looking for a way of living in a difficult world, and I think that's got plenty to say to people now.
Thank you very much for talking to us, Dr. Blasko.
Thank you.
The best book currently in print in English about Gumilyov is not a full biography, as we've discussed, but instead deals with his relationship with Anna Akhmatova. It is called Swan Songs, Akhmata and Gumilyov, and is by Francis Laird, published by Author House in paperback. Next week, we'll be discussing Anthony Beaver's book about the battle for Berlin on the anniversary of the final defeat of Nazi Germany. I hope you will join us then. In the meantime, remember that all programs in this series can be downloaded from our website. Search for ruvr.ru, select the English language page, then follow the links to Russian Book World. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.